As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hi there, this is The Athletic Football Podcast Weekend Preview. We are back for 2024 and it is an FA Cup weekend. Hi there, everyone. It is Adam Leventhal. Happy New Year to you all, and welcome to our guest panel. John McKenzie, how are you?
Really good, thank you. I'm raring to go for a new year. How are you?
I'm very well, John. Thank you very much. I'm all set. Tim Spears is back again. I noticed not wearing your T-shirt, Tim.
No. Oh, it's two sizes too small for me, so, you know. It would look silly.
Okay, fine. But it is good to have you back on board. And Nick Miller is here as well. How are you, Nick?
I'm very well. I notice I haven't got a T-shirt of any description. Can't help but feel a bit left out.
Mm. I also feel left out, for the record.
Well, you'll both have to just simply get over it, because we've got a show to do. And just a reminder to everyone that all of the episodes of the Athletic Football Podcast are now available on the YouTube channel. Most of the time, we will be in the studio this week. We are remotely. The fixture formation, a little bit of a difficult one this, because there are so many games and it is an FA Cup weekend. So this is the fixture formation. 1-3-19-8.
That's ridiculous.
From Thursday through until Monday. I know it's ridiculous, Tim. I know. Look, you roll your eyes even if it's a basic one. So I wasn't expecting anything less from you. There are 32 fixtures and I'm going to go through all 32 fixtures in a minute. Why? I don't know, but we're just going to do it anyway. So, ready? Start the clock. Last night, we had Crystal Palace against Everton. That was one of four all Premier League ties. Friday evening, Brentford against Wolves, Spurs against Burnley. Those are two more of those four Premier League ties. You also have Fulham against Rotherham. On Saturday, it is Maidstone against Stevenage, Coventry against Oxford, Millwall against Leicester, Wimbledon against Ipswich, Sunderland against Newcastle, more on that in a moment, Watford against Chesterfield, Stoke against Brighton, Gillingham Sheffield United, Blackburn Cambridge, Newport County against Eastleigh, Norwich against Bristol Rovers, QPR Bournemouth, Plymouth against Sutton, Southampton Walsall, Hull Birmingham, Sheffield Wednesday against Cardiff, Chelsea Preston, Swansea Morecambe, Middlesbrough against Aston Villa. Then on Sunday, West Ham against Bristol City, Forest against Blackpool, Luton Bolton, Peterborough against Leeds, Shrewsbury against Wrexham, West Brom Aldershot, Man City Huddersfield, and then the fourth all Premier League tie, Arsenal against Liverpool, followed on Monday night by Wigan against Manchester United. Nick, did we make it in a minute?
No, that was 1 minute and 9 seconds.
Oh, for goodness sake.
It's the, you're never gonna get that Soccer Saturday gig. Sorry, Adam. Gotta keep trying.
No, I know. Doomed. Anyway, should we just crack on with the podcast and see if we can do that in around about 30 minutes or so? Let's start in the Northeast. So 12:45 on Saturday in the UK, it is Sunderland against Newcastle, the first Tyne Wear derby since 2016. That was the year that Newcastle were relegated from the Premier League. They bounced straight back the following year from the Premier League. Sunderland went down, ended up in League One after back-to-back relegations, and they didn't get back up until two seasons ago, and they almost made it back-to-back promotions, but they missed out to Luton in the playoffs last season. But Sunderland, if you go back to 2016, they're actually now going for four wins in a row against their great rivals. For each of you, how would you describe this derby in particular, the Tyne Wear derby? What word would you use to describe it, Tim?
Rowdy, I would say. Rowdy AF, as the kids would say.
Yeah, oh, I like it. Okay, Nick?
Can I just use the word horse? Because
yes.
Famously, of course, this was the game after which...
With an A or without an A or both?
Without an A. Famously, this was the game after which a man punched a horse. Very sad for the horse. I'm very sad for the man as well, who was... This was in 2013, and the man, his name was Barry Rogerson. I've looked this up. He was banned from football for 6 years. So he could theoretically attend this game. His ban ran out in 2019. So,
what was the name of the horse, Nick?
God damn it. I didn't check the name of the horse. It was a police horse.
What? So he's the victim here. Come on. Yeah. Or she. Could be she. Don't know.
Okay, talk amongst yourselves and try and find out the name of the horse.
We'll come back to you in a minute and we'll get the word in the meantime from John to describe this tie, Sunderland Newcastle.
How do you feel about hyphenated phrases? Because I want to say weirdly one-sided with hyphens in between each one, because it feels to me like the last few times I've watched these games, Sunderland have tended to win, and that seemed to be the pattern for the last few when I was watching them in the Premier League. So yeah, it's been weirdly one-sided, but in the wrong direction, you would have thought.
I've got the name of the horse.
Oh yes,
The horse was called Bud, B-U-D, Bud the horse.
That's a terrible name for a horse, but yeah, it is very good context.
Yeah, I like it. Let's deal with the Newcastle side of things. We'll talk about Sunderland as well in a minute, but it's a difficult time for them. Obviously, they were battered against Liverpool on New Year's Day, where they conceded an historic and record-breaking XG tally of 7.27. Before we go into the sort of struggles of Newcastle, just on that point, John, and for people who don't digest XG particularly well, 7.27, that is remarkable, is it not?
Yeah, it's right up there with one of the biggest figures for aggregate XG that you'll see for a single game. And most of the time, you know, when teams put up big scores, their XG total will usually be much lower than that. So I think when Liverpool beat Bournemouth 9-0, I think the XG total was under 3. So in this instance, you know, there's a possible world where Liverpool will score something like 12, 13 goals. So yeah, this is unprecedented. There's been very few examples in elite football of that sort of total happening. I'm pretty sure it's the highest one we've seen in the Premier League. But the other games that have topped that have been games like Bayern Munich versus Bochum a few seasons back. So yeah, really unprecedented number of expected goals.
And in general terms on Newcastle's form, Tim, is that symptomatic of a side that is just going in one direction and in decline? Or is it still related to injuries? What's your read on Eddie Howe's Newcastle at the moment?
I'd say injuries plus Champions League really taken a massive dent to their sort of Premier League performances. They gave so much to what was an incredibly tough Champions League group. It was very exciting time for the fans, the management, the players as well. It was the big thing of their first half of the season. And yeah, losing or dropping out of Europe in the way that they did was always going to be hard to recover from. Plus the injuries. I mean, you talk about XG. Their XG against in their previous game at home to Forest was 3.5, which for a home team is very, very bad. It was 3.8 at Spurs recently when they shipped 4. It was 3.3 at Everton. It was 4.4 at PSG when they should have got absolutely spanked. And all of these have come since late November. People will remember the PSG game was when they couldn't even make a sub in the game because they were down to so few senior players. I think you combine that with the fact that they overperformed last year. They had a very solid and consistent defence last year. They conceded 33 goals all season in the Premier League. They're already up to 29 this year. You've got dips in form for Kieran Trippier. You've got Nick Pope not there. You've got Tonali not there. And I think Spurs have had a comparable injury record, as in it's been horrendous. But the difference is that Spurs haven't had any other games in between, and they've had no Europe to play for. Whereas, like I said, Newcastle gave everything to Champions League, and they're still recovering from that, I think.
So, does that, you know, from your point of view, Tim, do you think that the hierarchy at Newcastle are going to be patient and just go, all, you know, we'll just, this is what happens in the Premier League, or do you think that their minds might start to be thinking about a bigger ticket manager to take them on to that next level?
It's a good question, and I guess we don't know how patient or impatient these owners are going to be. But to be fair, you know, you say big ticket. I mean, their first manager was Eddie Howe, who was a gamble. They could have gone out and paid for pretty much whoever they wanted or at the time. And you look at their recruitment strategy, it's been sort of a bit slower than we might have expected and fewer superstars than we might have expected. And I think that hints at a more sensible long-term approach. It seems like they're probably getting good guidance and good advice. You always hear noises as to when a manager's in danger, and you certainly don't hear anything on that front about Eddie Howe. So I think, yeah, given the circumstances, given they're ahead of schedule in their projects. I know you're going to keep doing this with every guest until somebody goes for Newcastle with a two-footed challenge, but it's not happened just yet. But yeah, no, I think they're playing the longer game in answer to your question.
I wrote an article at the end of last season where I did go in for the two-footed challenge, and it didn't turn out that brilliantly for me, so I'm going to kind of artfully swerve that for the time being. I just direct people to the article, and they could sort of shout themselves hoarse with an A this time in the comments.
Lovely stuff.
Thanks.
Let's talk about the red and white side of the proposition. And, you know, we are obviously focusing the majority of the time on Premier League action. We preview the weekend action in the top division. In terms of Sunderland, where do they sort of figure on your radar, John?
Well, they don't particularly figure on my radar that much at all, apart from the fact that I'm a Leeds United fan, so we occasionally clash with them this season. But yeah, it's sort of hard to read where Sunderland are at right now in terms of the level, because obviously they have a new manager who has only been in charge for, I think, 4 league games. So we're still coming to terms with what Michael Beale's Sunderland are going to look like. They let Tony Mowbray go at a point where Sunderland were doing okay in the table. So I think there's been questions raised about, certainly from the fan base, about that aspect of why you might let the manager go in those conditions. But it does seem as though Michael Beale is starting to get results out of a Sunderland team who I think have, you know, some exciting players. And I think the expectation is that they would be there and thereabouts in the playoff positions come the end of the Championship season. So early days yet. And I suppose that balancing off where Sunderland are at with where Newcastle are at, obviously Newcastle going through a little bit of a shaky period, and Sunderland potentially having what is colloquially known as a new manager bounce. This does set it up to be quite an interesting prospect, I think, of a fixture, with obviously all of the backstory riding on it as well in terms of the rivalry between these two clubs.
Now, before we recorded, I checked in with a colleague of mine from Sky Sports News, Tom White, who is a big Sunderland fan, just to sort of get his feel ahead of the game. And this is what he said in terms of potential match winners. Jack Clark is the one to watch for Sunderland. But also he spoke glowingly about Jobe Bellingham. Sunderland have a Bellingham. They have his younger brother. And Jude Bellingham, whilst La Liga was on a break, spent some time at Sunderland seeing his brother, seeing his family and stuff. And this is what Tom said about Bellingham. He said he's pure class. He just needs to fill out a little bit. Very intelligent on the ball. Great first touch. Keeps it simple. Usually plays as a 10, but is maybe more effective as a striker. He might actually play there on Saturday, he says. He wants to play as a box-to-box midfielder, but he's not as effective when he plays as deep. These are just his thoughts. He's very mature, though. He plays like he has hundreds of appearances under his belt, but he's only 18. He basically sounds like a carbon copy of his brother, doesn't he, Tim?
Yes, although he doesn't have Bellingham on the back of his shirt, which I find really interesting. So he's Job, and that's a very sort of deliberate thing, I think, to create his own separate identity. It must be hard, you know, his brother's over at Real Madrid being one of the best players in the world. Although I guess it helps him the fact that he's not like 5 or 6 years younger than his brother and he's had to constantly see his success, you know, in this daunting sort of sphere ahead of him. And he's sort of rapidly following in his footsteps, I guess. And like Jude, he's having a very, very productive season at Championship level, and who knows where that's going to lead. But yeah, it is kind of uncanny, the similarities, like in terms of position, but also just the way that they move. And, you know, same position, they look and move very similarly. They're both not lacking in composure or technical ability or balance. This is, well, I guess the biggest game of his career, right? So everybody's looking forward to seeing how he gets on.
I was reading an interview with him and it feels like he's sort of slightly ahead of schedule in terms of like where he thought his career might be at this point. He only really got in the Birmingham team properly last season. I think it was a bit of a surprise that he moved, or, you know, certainly when he moved to Sunderland. So, yeah, I mean, huge amounts of sympathy for him, because even if he was a different sort of player, if he was a holding midfielder, or even if he was like a winger or, you know, something, then the comparisons to his brother wouldn't be mentioned in every article and every podcast that people do about him. But because they are sort of play broadly in the same position, although as we said, he might play up front, it's just impossible not to compare the two.
Well, we shall see how he fares in the game. Let's have a little bit of this feels like a bit of a stab in the dark on what the score is going to be. Let's start with your prediction, John.
I think that Newcastle will win this game, and I think the score will be 2-0.
Jolly good. Tim?
I think if you take a very out-of-form Newcastle team and replace them with even weaker players, and yeah, if Sunderland pick a strong team, I think they will win 2-1.
Okay. And Nick?
I think Sunderland will win 2-0.
Really? This is good. 1-2, 2-1 and 2-0. We will see what happens and we will reflect on that next week. Next on this show is Arsenal against Liverpool.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
So Sunday, 4:30 at the Emirates. It is the most high-profile clash of the weekend. Arsenal, similar to Newcastle, but not quite as bad, going through a little bit of a tricky spell at the moment. They're looking to get back on track. Liverpool are top of the lot as we ended 2023 in the Premier League. We should just mention AFCON, of course, and the Asia Cup as well, because it's having an impact on teams in the Premier League, some teams in the EFL as well. But Liverpool losing Mo Salah, and for potentially the entirety of the AFCON, because we know last time out Egypt went all the way to the final. Just a quick word on how they're going to deal without him, John.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be very difficult. Mo Salah is, I think, at the top of the direct goal involvements table right now in the Premier League for this season with 22. That puts him 4 ahead of Erling Haaland, who's on 18. Son Heung-min actually up there as well. He will be another player who will be going off to play in international competition as well at the same time. But yeah, Mohamed Salah being very, very important to the way that Liverpool are playing at the moment, and losing him and, you know, not having a sort of direct replacement that comes to mind to have him filling in that slot, means that Liverpool are going to have to be creative in some ways in order to get around that aspect of the game. So yeah, I think Mohamed Salah being out for a month or so, however long it will end up being, is going to be it's going to raise the toughest questions about how good this Liverpool team are actually.
And it was also interesting watching the game against Newcastle. I think it was remarked upon by whoever the co-commentator was. I think it was Gary Neville, speaking about Endo, and he's going to be at the Asia Cup. That's another sort of maybe sort of more low-key blow, because he seemed to be getting into his stride for Liverpool, and that will mean okay, it's no bad thing bringing in a World Cup winner in Alexis McAllister, but it does have a little bit of an impact on the dynamic in that midfield, Tim.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, he's very smart in possession, very good at winning the ball back, sort of a composed, no-fuss player who you miss, really. And it's bad timing. Some clubs have only got 2 games or so this month, but Liverpool have got 5 because they're in the Carabao Cup semis. And then they've got this big game against Arsenal in the league coming up in the first week of February. So with him, they've got the strongest squad in the league in terms of depth, I think, in terms of quality from the bench, not being too dissimilar to a lot of the players they have in the first 11. But still, as John rightly says, in terms of Salah in particular, we are going to really see how good they are, because there are certain players, certainly that forward line, who certainly someone called Darwin Nunes, who really need to start stepping up in the absence of others now.
Just a quick one from you, Nick. Where do you think the FA Cup lies in Liverpool's priority list at the moment, in this season in particular, when they do have this genuine chance of winning the Premier League?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be their fourth priority at the moment, because it is, by definition, the competition that they are furthest away from winning. Their priority should be the league. They're obviously into the kind of knockout stages of the Europa League. They're in semi-final of the Carabao Cup. So, you know, while they're not going to completely throw the FA Cup, and you know, it's a game against Arsenal, so you know that they might have to consider the kind of psychological effect that might have if they lose this game on the league game coming up and the rest of the league games for the rest of the month, I suppose. But yeah, I wouldn't expect that Jurgen Klopp is going to play a particularly strong or at least not a first choice team, particularly given the kind of other injuries that they have at fullback in particular. So yeah, I think it's comfortably their fourth priority in terms of the competitions that they're still in, because it's the one they're furthest away from winning.
Arsenal's last 6 games, John, lost against Aston Villa, drew against PSV, beat Brighton, drew against Liverpool, lost against West Ham, and lost against Fulham. What's wrong with them at the minute? Because Mikel Arteta seemingly is a bit worried. He did say that the Fulham performance was their worst of the season. Are you worried?
Yeah, I think it's funny, because I'm old enough to remember people thinking Arsenal were going to win the league earlier in the season, and they looked unbeatable. I mean, even that game against Brighton was their best performance of the season, and they looked like they could take anyone on playing in that way. Brighton were barely able to generate a chance. And I suppose this game is quite interesting insofar as we arrive at it within the context of Liverpool having played quite well recently, Arsenal having dropped off. So it's very tempting to just be like, well, you know, Arsenal are bad now, Liverpool are good. But this season has been crazy for upheavals in terms of what we expected. We thought that Man City were miles off the pace, and they find themselves, what, if they win their game in hand, 2 points off the top of the table. So that's not to say that Arsenal don't have concerns, but I think they've had those concerns all the way through the season, and they've been able to overcome those issues, particularly in possession of the ball, I think, when they've needed to at certain times. And how many times have we seen them in across the last 2 seasons, finishing games off late on, finding it within themselves to get the goals that are needed. So I think that this is a lot. This isn't just a sort of recent phenomenon. I think that essentially maybe some of the issues that they've had for a while have caught up with themselves. But for me, a lot of this comes down to the fact that what we've seen from Mikel Arteta, especially this season, has been risk aversion, setting up a team. And I think maybe off the back of last season, when the frailties that they had were perhaps more defensively minded, feels as though he's gone into this season to try and fix those defensive problems in particular. And what they've ended up doing is making a team that are just incredibly solid from a defensive point of view, but a team that does have issues in terms of how they're going to generate goals. So I think Arsenal are very much in a sort of transitional stage right now, working out what it is that they are going to be going forward. And a lot of this, I think, comes under the remit of teething issues with different players in different structures and trying to work out their identity as a team.
It's an interesting point, John, and I suppose it does sort of beg the question that obviously focusing on whether they bring in a striker in January would necessarily solve all their issues, but it may well sort of force a bit of a change, a bit more clarity, I suppose. Would you feel, say, if Ivan Toney came in, John, that 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 would be a catalyst for change and more positivity, or that those issues wouldn't disappear?
Yeah, again, it comes back to what I was saying about the identity of the team. And I suppose to me, a lot of the questions about, oh, if they just bring in a classic number nine to be able to finish those the sorts of chances that they're going to be creating from those wide areas, then you're effectively saying this is the kind of team that we're going to be now. And let's not forget, this is an Arsenal team who, when you look at the amount of the ratio of open play goals that they're scoring compared to goals in general, it's around 50%. So 50% of the goals that they're generating are from set pieces. And I think, you know, a lot of that comes from the fact that they have become very risk averse in many respects, right? And if you compare that to recent winners of the Premier League, their ratio of open play goals to goals has been up at, you know, 70, 80%, much higher. So, yes, maybe the short-term solution is bring in a number nine, start finishing the sorts of chances that you're generating. But in the long run, does that mean that you've got Mikel Arteta moving away from the sort of play style that he actually wants Arsenal to be playing? And then, you know, you're creating more longer-term issues in that respect. I don't know. I don't know how Mikel Arteta would answer that question. But I suspect that maybe some of those questions might be answered by thinking about how do we, as I said before, progress the ball in ways that are going to suit the profile of players that we already have, rather than attempting to bring in players to fit a play style which maybe isn't working quite so well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And it's interesting, obviously, you know, we haven't mentioned it really yet, that we are now in the January transfer window and the coverage continues on The Athletic. As always with our transfer blog, and you'll find out any developments on Arsenal and all of the teams in the Premier League, the EFL around Europe as well with our coverage. So you can keep posted on the transfer window. Final point on Arsenal against Liverpool, your predictions, what way do you think it's going to go, Nick?
Ooh, Liverpool to win narrowly. I'm going to say 2-1.
Mm-hmm. Tim?
It's difficult to call, really, because you don't know who's going to play. So we'll see a lot of rotation from both teams. Who's at home?
Arsenal.
Okay, yeah, we'll go with an Arsenal win, 1-0.
And John?
Yeah, so Arsenal and Liverpool have played recently, and I thought in that game, Liverpool did a really good job of sort of pulling Arsenal to their level, playing really dynamic, attacking, progressive football, and reducing control that Arsenal like to have. And I think if the game follows that same process, I think Arsenal will struggle. So I'll say Liverpool to win 2-0.
Jolly good. I've jotted it down. Next, John, you're off to West London. So let's have a look at one of the other all Premier League ties in this FA Cup third round weekend. And John, you're sort of muscling in on Tim's love affair with Wolves by heading off to see the game at Brentford. Why that one?
Well, I mean, I feel a bit embarrassed saying this, but I'm good pals with one of the assistant coaches at Brentford, and he offered me tickets. So I thought, you know what? Yeah, I'll go. It's a Friday night, but it's not too late on a Friday night. It's a 7:15 kickoff. So I thought, you know, I'll treat myself, take one of my friends along. And so I've been to a few games at the GTEC this season, and it's a really good experience. I really like going to the stadium. Always have a good time there. Always think Brentford put on good football. I know they haven't been doing so well in terms of results this season, but it's always very enjoyable to get along. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, knowing the club so well, just explain to me how they're feeling about the form that they're in. They've lost 5 in a row. They're only 5 points above the relegation zone. Obviously, Thomas Frank is sort of a pretty sort of cool cucumber, but I would have thought even he is sort of starting to go, yeah, we need to just maybe come up with some of the answers now.
Yeah, I'm afraid I can't boast any sort of special insight to what's going on in terms of the club. But yeah, I'm sure they are not happy with the way things have gone this season, because it's definitely been that the club has been heading in a direction, at least in terms of the table, that they don't want to be heading in. But I think it's a funny one, because I think if you look at a lot of the underlying numbers here, and I know, you know, that's my constant refrain, the underlying numbers aren't everything. I will always push back on people who suggest that. But actually, if you look at a lot of the results that they've had, they've been quite unlucky. There's been a lot of games where they've sort of leveled out in terms of chance creation with teams and ended up losing those games. And people will remember the game at Old Trafford where they were 1-0 up going into injury time, and that ended up being turned around. Yeah, so if you trace your way down all of their results, almost all of the results where they've ended up dropping points, you could argue that on a different day there might have been different results there. So I think, again, that's not to offer excuses for them, because I think they will obviously be going through the tape and looking and thinking, what are common problems that are occurring that are causing us to drop these points. But at the same time, I think there's enough there to suggest they're strong enough that they won't be in any sort of danger of dropping into the bottom three.
I'll ask Tim about Wolves in a minute, but Nick, in terms of Brentford, they can't let Ivan Toney leave in this window, can they? Even if a team comes up with, you know, the reported £100 million that they may well want.
No, I mean, and I can't imagine that anyone will sort of come up with that amount of money for a player that hasn't been playing for, you know, most of the season. But yeah, that even if they didn't have the injuries that they have up front, where, you know, the backups to Toney or the players that were playing alongside him aren't, most of those players aren't going to be available for a little while either. So, you know, I can't envisage a scenario where they will actually let him go unless there is someone desperate enough to come up with, you know, huge amounts of money. In the summer, it's obviously going to be a different story. He'll be a few months closer to the end of his contract, so that will sort of theoretically make him a better candidate for other teams. He might be a little bit cheaper, and he'll have, you know, half a season of actually playing football behind him. So yeah, I can't imagine that he will leave in January, but probably in the summer.
Meanwhile, no such problems or concerns for Wolves, going great guns under Gary O'Neill. I suppose that the one sort of disappointment or challenge or hurdle or whatever you want to call it for Gary O'Neill is that he's going to have to deal without Hwang Hee-chang for a little bit of time because he's off to the Asia Cup. I suppose you don't want to be missing him at all when you probably think he might be snapped up by a bigger club at some point, Tim, or is that unfair?
Well, I mean, Wolves have only got one league game for the rest of the month, so he's not going to be missing as many games as he normally would. I mean, he's done amazing. He's always had that sort of clinical touch, but it's a pretty small sample size in terms of his great run of form. You know, he's spent 2 years not scoring, really. So I wouldn't have thought many clubs would be after him based on his form as well as he's done. I mean, there might be in terms of his marketability, because, you know, I tell you what, I see it firsthand with Son at Spurs every week, just how valuable he is in terms of a profitable commodity. And yeah, Hwang behind Son is an extremely popular player in South Korea, which Wolves are keen to exploit. So that's the reason they'll want to keep hold of him as well, by the way. But yeah, he's had an amazing season. And yeah, but to balance out his absence, one of the best players from the Premier League in the opening few weeks and months of the season, Pedro Neto, who people may have forgotten about, he's back from injury. He's had a couple of months out. So yeah, that balances it out. And yeah, no, like I said, no league game for Wolves until the 22nd of January from this point. So that might lend them to play a stronger team in this game than they normally might.
When was the last time that Wolves won a major trophy, Tim?
Oh, God. Are you all right. I'll just give you the answer. It's 1980, okay? It's fine.
Beating Forest in the final League Cup in 1980, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I just wanted to say, because, you know, Forest have won a major trophy, Wolves have won a major trophy, and it is worth just checking out.
I'll just interrupt you there. Wolves haven't just won a major trophy, they've won many, right? They've won three leagues, four FA Cups and two League Cups, okay?
Okay, sorry, I stand very, very corrected, but it was just making the point that they have won a major trophy. You know, Nottingham Forest have won, like Wolves, multiple
and
major
Watford,
trophies.
And Watford haven't, yeah.
But there is an article that you
could...
Yeah, I know, that's the whole point. Just let me get the bloody words out. So, basically, there is an article on The Athletic ahead of this weekend that is, who is the biggest club in England to have never won a major trophy? And yes, I do put the case forward for Watford. It's not the strongest case, but there are some other writers from The Athletic that put forward their cases for the likes of Crystal Palace and Fulham, Brighton as well. So yeah, you can check that out on The Athletic. I just wanted to mention it, all right? That's all. Just a quick word about some of the other games in the FA Cup this weekend. Wigan against Manchester United. Cup shock? Are we in on that, do you think, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, it will be incredibly funny, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, it is one of those kind of situations where it's either going to go one of two ways, either ripe for a cup shock or United will just steamroller them and it'll be, you know, 5-0 and a bunch of fringe players will score goals and, you know, no one will pay much attention to it. But yeah, it's certainly a potential for a shock there.
Well, we'll see what happens in that one. A quick word about Forest against Blackpool. All is well at Forest now, isn't it, Nick, with Nuno in charge? It was never in doubt. What a manager.
As Tim will tell you, our WhatsApp history between me and Tim will tell you, I always rated Nuno and welcomed his appointment with open arms.
You know I can screenshot those messages, right? You know, you're aware I've got that ability.
Just give me a minute. I'll just do some updating. I exaggerate slightly because it wasn't like I was kind of wailing at Tim's feet that Nuno was replacing Steve Cooper. I was just kind of in a emotional place at the time. Cooper having gone, but yeah, it's going superbly so far. I mean, it is only three games, but. Beat Newcastle, beat Manchester United. Morgan Gibbs-White is suddenly playing brilliantly, having been not great for a lot of the season. Two wingers playing well. He's got Chris Wood scoring goals, which is about as close to actual magic as I think you could get, bearing in mind his performances for the rest of the season. So, yeah, I would imagine that there won't be too many of the kind of first-choice players playing in this game. But then again, he might, although obviously he wasn't here last season. Forest played Blackpool in the third round last season and got absolutely thumped. I forget what the score was, but I think it may have been 4-1. Yeah, that was the sort of nadir of last season. So even though he wasn't there, he might think of that as a sort of cautionary tale and play a slightly stronger team. But yeah, all going very well so far.
Now, just before we go, I wanted to talk about 2024, and obviously, as we've acknowledged, we do like a prediction. We've got half a season behind us. I wanted to get some predictions for the rest of the season. We'll start with all of the trophies, the three major English trophy winners for this season. So I'll start with you, John, and I just want three names: Premier League, FA Cup, Carabao Cup.
You definitely like predictions too much, and I absolutely hate predictions. So, Premier League...
Deal with it and get on with it.
I'll be boring and say Man City. In the FA Cup, look, well, there's 32 teams left in it in a knockout tournament, so like anyone. So, Bournemouth, I don't know. and then Carabao Cup, I'll go with Liverpool.
Thank you, Tim.
See, I've just realised that earlier on in the show, I predicted that Liverpool will be knocked out of the FA Cup. And yet I've written down that they're going to win the FA Cup. So we'll go with Arsenal for the FA Cup. Man City for Premier League and Fulham for the Carabao.
Okay. Lovely. Nick?
Yeah, well, again, boringly, Manchester City for the Premier League, Tottenham for the FA Cup, and then am I going to go boring with the Carabao? Middlesbrough. I'll go with Middlesbrough.
Really? Okay, fine. Jolly good.
Come on.
Fine, that's the first set of predictions that we've got. And this might be a little bit more challenging, but it might actually get John a little bit more excited because we're going to ask for the predictions of the winners for the Champions League, the Europa League, and, ooh, John, the Conference League. Who's going to win that? So let's start off with you, John. Champions League, Europa League and Conference League.
I'm going to disappoint you. I've got English team, English team, English team. Do you want more than that?
No, nothing more specific than that. Just English team, English team, English team.
Names.
I'll say Leverkusen for the Europa League just to be a little bit more interesting. But I do still think that Liverpool probably will win it. Conference League, I'll go Villa. Champions League, I'll go Real Madrid. I don't even believe that.
So I'm taking Real Madrid, Leverkusen and Villa.
Yeah.
Tim?
Champions League, Harry Kane's going to win the final at Wembley and then he's going to win the Euros in Germany a month later. So Bayern Munich for the Champions League and Liverpool for the Europa and Fiorentina for the Conference League.
Nice. Nick?
Like John, I've gone with Aston Villa for the Conference League. No logic at all to the Champions League and Europa League predictions. PSG for the Champions League and Galatasaray for the Europa League.
Ooh. I do like that. Right. Euro 2024. Tim, you've already said that England are going to win it. That's right,
it's
yeah?
coming home. Mm-hmm.
Okay. John?
I'm also going to go with Scotland, actually. I'm going to go with Scotland.
Right. Okay. You're taking the piss. Nick?
Germany to beat England in the final.
Okay. Fine. Right. A little bit broader. Relegated from the Premier League. John first.
I will say Luton, Burnley and Sheffield United.
Okay. Fine. Tim?
Brentford, Burnley and Sheffield United.
Oh, okay. And Nick?
Yeah, I go with, as things stand, the sort of boring three, Luton, Burnley, Sheffield United, pending possible points deductions for Forest? Because if Forest get the Everton treatment, then yes, there could be some problems there.
Yes, that is an ongoing situation, which you will find out the latest on The Athletic, of course. Does anyone know who's going to come up from the Championship?
It'd be the same teams that went down last season. So Leicester will go through top, followed by Southampton, and then Leeds will win the playoff final.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Tim?
Yeah, same top two, Leicester, Southampton, and Leeds will lose the playoff final to Sunderland.
To Sunderland. Okay, good. And Nick?
Yeah, well, I've got Leicester, Leeds to finish second, and then Ipswich to win the playoffs.
Okay, now, a bit more sort of explanation around this. Who's going to be the breakthrough player of 2024, John?
So I was watching Girona versus Atletico Madrid yesterday and I was very impressed by Pablo Torre, who is a Barcelona player on loan at Girona. So I thought I'd throw him there to be topical. But the other players that I've got, I've got Florian Wirtz at Leverkusen, who I think maybe breakthrough is probably pushing it a little bit. But I think this summer he'll get a move somewhere big and everyone will be talking about him. And then the other player I've got is Valentin Barco, who's a Boca Juniors player who's been linked with Manchester City, but is a left-sided, sort of has played as a fullback, also as a midfielder as well. I think he's quite an exciting talent. I think he will move to Europe and do something fun.
Tim, breakthrough player for you?
I mean, how do you follow that really? I mean, I was also watching Girona v Atletico Madrid yesterday, but nobody stood out for me. So, Alvaro Morata. it depends what you mean by breakthrough, really. But the kid at Dortmund, Jamie Bynoe-Gittins, he's already broken through. He scored in the Champions League, for goodness sake. But it feels like he's the one who could get a move to the Premier League this summer and everyone will start to hear of him, unlike John, who knows everything about him already.
Yeah, okay. No, I like that. And Nick, anyone that you've got your eye on that you think, oh, yeah, he's going to go far?
Yeah, again, it's slightly stretching the definition of breakthrough, given that he's been playing the Champions League this season. But what... Johan Bakayoko at PSV looks very exciting, and I suspect, I don't know whether he'll go in January, but I suspect he will move somewhere in the summer, and yeah, he looks pretty good.
Okay. As we mentioned before, we are in the transfer window period at the moment, but a transfer that you would like to see for whatever reason this year. John?
So I've gone for Izzy Palathon from Rayo Vallecano to Bournemouth, because I think the reunion of Andoni Areola and Izzy Palathon would be a beautiful thing.
That was just dripping in hipster goodness. Thank you for that. Tim?
John has taken mine, so I'll go with someone else. So I love how Man United always sign a non-goal scoring striker at this time of year. So it was Odion Ighalo a few years ago. It was Wout Weghorst last year. So I'm backing them because, you know, they need to bring a striker in, to sign Rian Brewster, who's currently scored no goals in 34 Premier League appearances, all for Sheffield United. So I think he's tailor-made for Old Trafford.
Okay, good. And Nick?
Well, I've kind of gone with a similar theory in that I like the sticking plaster Manchester United striker in January theme. But I almost feel like I've wasted this one by picking one that is sort of, it feels like it could plausibly happen and actually plausibly be quite good, given that Karim Benzema doesn't seem awfully happy in Saudi. So, hey, maybe he could sign for Manchester United.
Okay, any new tactics that you would like to see? And these can be as reasonable and sort of knowledge-based or as weird and wonderful as you would like them to be? John, let's start with you. The new tactic of 2024.
See, you can't ask me that question and not expect me to talk for 5 minutes. So I'm going to be very short. I'll make sure I don't talk too much. But what I will say is that I think in the last few seasons, what we've seen is that teams have become very solid, pressing high up the field. And they've become very structured and they've become very aggressive. And what we're starting to see now, I think, is teams being very flexible in their build-up. So teams like Spurs, where you see a lot of rotations between players. Liverpool against Arsenal, I thought, was an interesting example of that because Arsenal have one of the best high presses in the league. But Liverpool have Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's essentially now becoming a very sort of floaty build-up player, which is kind of quite new. So I think what we're going to start seeing is much more flexibility in build-up structures to make it harder for oppositions to press high up the field. And so I think that's typified by Trent Alexander-Arnold playing almost like a quarterback, being able to move all the way across the field and do what he does so well.
Tim?
Well, this isn't really a tactic, but you know how players get booked for waving an imaginary yellow card? I think they're going to start to get booked for doing the TV VAR thing. That's not really a tactic. It's just a prediction.
No, I can see that. I can see that being grouped into the same category. Yeah, okay. I like that. Nick?
I quite like to see, and I'm sort of peering over my laptop screen at John, who may well tell me that this is already happening somewhere, but I quite like to see the return of the sort of slightly flighty sweeper, someone who kind of sat behind the defence and just kind of wandered forward every now and then. I'm basically saying that because that's essentially how I play at five-a-side, because it tends to involve minimal running and maximum occasional good passes. So, yeah, I quite like to see that coming back.
Lovely. I like that. A nice mix. That is all we have time for today. I really appreciate you being on the show, as always. Nick, thank you.
No worries, I'll expect my T-shirt next time.
Ah, yes. Yep, next Christmas. Tim, thank you.
Cheers, Adam. Well done for getting through one show without saying you know what.
Thank you. New Year's resolution, never in doubt. And John, thank you to you. And I hope you enjoy sitting on the bench alongside Thomas Frank and all your friends at Brentford.
Yeah, well, I always enjoy a little bit of Leventhal ball. So, yeah, I've had a great time today.
That's fine. That is fine. You can say it, I can't say it. That is all for today. Io is going to be back on Monday as usual. If you're not already an Athletic subscriber, you can sign up now for £2 or $2 a month for the first 12 months. Go to theathletic.com/footballpod. Enjoy your FA Cup weekend and we'll see you next week. Take care.
The Athletic.